Good afternoon. My name is Dr. Kimberly Harper, and welcome to the ASU Big Read Book Discussion. Today, we're going to talk about love, liberation, and life in Zora Neale Hurston's popular novel, Their Eyes Were Watching God. The Big Read is an initiative of the National Endowment for the Arts designed to revitalize the role of literacy and reading in American culture. Before we get started, I'd like to just say thank you to our Big Read sponsors and partners, and special thanks to the City of Albany and Daugherty County. We couldn't have done it without your support. In the studio today, I have Miss Alicia Davenport and Miss Eloise Armstrong. Ladies, please take a moment to introduce yourselves to our listening audience.
Hi, my name is Eloise Armstrong, and I want to thank Dr. Harper for inviting us to the show. I'm originally from Sylvester, Georgia, but now I've lived up here for the past 7 years. I am a senior at Albany State University, and I am so excited about that because it has always been my dream to have a college education, and now I'm living and fulfilling my dream.
Thank you for having me on the show. My name is Alicia Davenport. I am a junior middle grades education major with concentration in English language arts. It has always been my desire to be a teacher. I love to read. I love literature. So I'm very excited to be here today.
Okay, well, wonderful. I'm happy to have both of you here today as well. I thoroughly enjoyed the book, and I can't wait to see what the both of you thought about the story. I was first introduced to Zora Neale Hurston's work when I read her short story, Sweat, and The Gilded Six-Bit, and then her autobiography, Dust Tracks on the Road, prior to reading the novel, The Eyes Were Watching God. So, let's get started, ladies. Obviously, love is one of the main themes in the story. And Alicia, I'm going to start with you. What similarities do you see between Janie's character and her pursuit of love and self-actualization that parallels what young women today are going through and dealing with?
Well, Janie's character was always on the search for love and something more as it pertained to the overall feeling of belonging and love. She had the void of not having her parents in her life, more particularly her father. So she was always yearning for real love and happiness. Mm-hmm. And some young women today face similar circumstances as the character Janie, in that they are on the quest for finding love and true happiness. They may have absent fathers, which in return will bring about low self-esteem. So there are many similarities between Janie and a lot of young women today.
Mm-hmm. What moved you most about her story? You know, I mean, she had three husbands, but, you know, what moved you most?
She had three husbands, but I was able to see the growth in each of her relationships. Each time she moved on to another relationship, she mm-hmm. took something from that with her that made her stronger and made her kind of realize her own self-worth. Mm-hmm. And I really like the fact that she was able to persevere in spite of all the hardships, and she did find true love in herself.
It's amazing how when you look at each relationship, she grew, like you said, she grew a little bit more. Eloise, what do you think about this coming of age story? What initially attracts her to each man?
The first husband was an arranged marriage by her grandmother, because her grandmother was getting on in age, and she said it was her time was coming near, and she wanted her to be protected and set up in life while she was still alive. She wanted to make sure that she was protected. And Janie's idea of love was not fulfilled in that first marriage. Mm-hmm. She had thoughts of love, her ideas of love, and she did not find it in her first marriage. And she thought in her second marriage that she would find love, but love was still not that idealistic view that she had from a little girl laying under a pear tree and dreaming of what love really was. Mm-hmm. And so in her third marriage, she finally found her true love. Mm-hmm. And so that brought her into her own. She was able to grow, and she was able to flow and become Janie and learn about herself. She learned a lot about herself through her marriage and in her true love relationship with Tea Cake. Mm-hmm. And so that's where she finally found her true love, with Tea Cake.
You know, when you talk about how she, you know, sat under the pear tree and, you know, thought about love, it reminded me of a part in the book where she talks about the seasons, and she waited for one season, then mm-hmm. another season, and she just kind of closed the door on that idea that love was going to happen with her first husband. Mm-hmm. And then she gets on the bench, you know, Jody comes through town and is like, I'm going to take you away from this, and she gets on that the horse and wagon, and she mm-hmm. says a bee was in her bloom. So she was hopeful again love happening the way she hoped it would, you know, I guess, unfold.
Right.
And then by the end of that marriage, she closed herself off again because it fell flat. What do you all think about the way in which the men in each relationship treated her? You know, what does that say about society or, you know, that time period?
During that time, women were supposed to be put upon a pedestal, seen and not heard. And Janie evidently was a beautiful girl, and everyone fell in love and was excited by her long hair, because black women typically didn't have long, beautiful hair like that. Mm-hmm. So Janie was looked upon as something special and something you would put in a glass case and keep it brushed and keep it clean and never to be touched and never to be harmed. And she thought that this would keep her, and she thought that this would excite her in life. But she really found it to be dull and boring, because she wanted to be heard. She had a story to tell. Mm-hmm. She had a voice. She had something in her that she wanted to come out, and she had something to say. But they never allowed her to say these things, so
even her grandmother cut that short.
She wouldn't allow her to express it. She told her, hush, hush, hush. Don't talk it. Don't speak about it. Don't say it. But Janie wanted more than what the world had given her to say.
Like in the book on page 25 for our listeners, she says, "So Janie waited a bloom time and a green time and an orange time. But when the pollen again gilded the sun and sifted down on the world, she began to stand around the gate and expect things. What things? She didn't exactly know. Her breath was gusty and short. She knew things that nobody had ever told her. For instance, the words of the trees and the wind. She often spoke to the falling seeds and said, 'I hope you fall on soft ground,' because she had heard seeds saying to each other as they passed." So there's a lot of imagery with nature in the book as well. What do y'all make of that?
Even the
spiritual connections, a lot of the biblical references as well.
Janie was self-taught. Mm-hmm. She taught herself about life, especially about love and feelings. Mm-hmm. And like she said, that she knew things, and that could only come from the Spirit, revealing things to her. So she had a spirit of revelations. She had a spirit of discernment, where she knew things, and she wanted to tell other people about these things, but she wasn't allowed to tell it. And Zora herself, her father was a pastor, or was a preacher. And so the biblical references are related to what she learned at home from her dad, from him being a preacher. And nature spoke to her because that's who taught her. She learned everything she knew about love from nature. And she always equated it back to nature, because that's where she had her first learning. Her first epitome came from being under that pear tree.
And it seems like that's where she was most at home, too. In a lot of ways, nature. When we think, I'm going to turn the conversation just a little bit. When we think about freedom and you know, kind of coming into your womanhood, Alicia, in the novel, she uses, you know, obviously Janie struggles to find her voice. During which moments is Janie's life silent? You know, when is there a quiet in her life?
Well, Janie's life is silent in her first two marriages. Mm-hmm. Although she did not want to be married to Logan, he was a source of security financially for her. Her grandmother's wish was for her to have that security. Mm-hmm. So in her second marriage, she was, of course, silenced because her husband was so boisterous, and she was pretty much like a fixture that was supposed to be seen and not heard. Mm-hmm. So she didn't really have a voice until she was with her love at the end of the story. And I think that she was able to express, she was able to come into herself in that relationship because she finally found her voice.
And she expressed herself, you know, I think about her second marriage with, what's the husband's name? Jody. Joe Starks. And on page 71, for those listeners out there who are following along, I love this part. He wanted her submission, and he kept on fighting until he felt he had it. So gradually, she pressed her teeth together and learned to hush. The spirit of the marriage left the bedroom and took to living in the parlor. It was there to shake hands whenever company came to visit, but it never went back inside the bedroom again. So she put something in there to represent the spirit, like a Virgin Mary image in a church. The bed was no longer a daisy field. You know, there's that imagery of nature again. For her and Joe to play in. It was a place where she went and laid down when she was sleepy and tired. And it's almost like she just closed herself up and she really became silent in that marriage. I think at the beginning she thought, here's my opportunity. I'm going to be free. I'm going to be in, I'm in love. This man loves me. He's honoring me. He wants me to have the best things in life. But that actually ended up being a cage for her.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And I think she was more silenced in this marriage than she was in the first marriage. Because right. she talked back to him quite a bit. You look at the dialogue. So it's just really interesting to see how Jody really did kind of like suck the life out of, or push the life out of her.
Right.
Eloise, what are your thoughts about this sense of freedom that, that she dealt with in her relationships, or the desire for that freedom?
She wanted to be heard. Like I said, she had a lot to say. And those marriages, especially that second marriage, kept her confined. In the beginning, Joe spoke of a change and chance, and he was offering her the opportunity to explore life unhampered by the drudgery of life that had her confined and restrained by a loveless marriage. He offered her something different, and she thought that this was love. Mm-hmm. So when she got with him and she found that it was almost as bad as the first marriage, in a sense, even though she had more financially, she still didn't have anything to say or wasn't allowed to say anything. She was still constrained from voicing her inner self.
Like, nope. She couldn't reach out to the townspeople and right. interact in the play.
She had, she it was like she was in a guilty cage.
Mm-hmm.
She, I mean, you could look at her, but you couldn't touch her, even in one instance where Joe caught someone rubbing her hair, and that really made him angry. So from then on, he made her tie her hair up.
Mm-hmm.
Because she was just, she was his property.
Mm-hmm.
And she didn't find her freedom until he passed away. And then she was free to enjoy life, and she could go fishing, and she could just sit around, and she didn't have to go to work. She could just mm-hmm. talk to her friends and just enjoy life in an opportunity where she never had it before. Even with her grandmother, she couldn't enjoy mm-hmm. life. There was always the restraints put on her. Mm-hmm. But now she had total freedom to do whatever it was that she wanted to do.
You know, and it seems like that last love affair or marriage with TK just really opened her up to just mm-hmm. stepping outside of the cage that her grandmother put her in. You know, maybe not cage, but the expectations that her mm-hmm. grandmother had for her life. And then the gilded cage, mm-hmm. Eloise, that you mentioned that Joe provided for her. Mm-hmm. And it was like she was so free to just be who she wanted to be. Mm-hmm. And Tea Cake brought that because he didn't care. He didn't care about people's opinions and about him, their thoughts of him. I think that was also what's kind of spurred that freedom for her. Because if you look at Joe Starks, he was very concerned about his public image. Mm-hmm. Even though nobody liked him by the time he died, they didn't care for him. They appreciated what he did for the town. But mm-hmm. people, it's almost kind of like my mother says, you want to be celebrated when you enter a room. And he wasn't celebrated. He was tolerated. Tea Cake just represented all types of freedom. But go ahead, Alicia.
I like the quote when she mm-hmm. said, because Tea Cake ain't no Jody Spark. So us is going off somewhere and start all over in Tea Cake's way. Mm-hmm. This ain't no business proposition and no race after property and titles. This is a love game. And I done live grandma's way. Now I means to live mine.
Mm, yes, I like that.
I like that quote.
Mm-hmm.
She basically was finding her true love, her happiness, something mm-hmm. that she always searched for. TK, he was not stern and, you know, mm-hmm. well-loved as Joe Sparks was initially.
Mm-hmm.
And she said that she wasn't living her grandma's way. Mm-hmm. She was living her way. And TK brought that out of her. He brought the fun and the excitement that she was longing for.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the beginning to her coming into her own.
Now let me ask y'all about the townspeople. When she first came back to town, she left town in this beautiful blue dress and was all dolled up. But when she came back, she was in some dusty overalls. I believe was she barefoot?
She was, I know she was in some muddy overalls, like she had been working in the field somewhere.
Mm-hmm. So what does the townspeople represent in this story to you all? I'm from a small town. Are you from Albany?
I'm from Albany.
Okay, so you know that whole everybody knows your people. You know, they don't ask you what's your name, they say who your people.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So what does the town, how do they play a role in her coming out, if you will?
Well, the town played a big role into her coming out because nobody wants to go back home worse than they were before, because they know that the townspeople are going to be talking and making speculations. Uh-huh. So for her to, you know, have enough courage to go back home after all that she had gone through, and to know that people were going to be making speculations about her, but to still go back with her happiness, something that she didn't leave with. Mm-hmm. And the townspeople, they couldn't see that. They only were looking at, you know, what was on the surface, her muddy overalls and her appearance. So I think that the town played a big role in who she was.
They had high expectations of her because she was Joe Stark's wife.
Right.
So they expected her to act in a certain way, in a certain manner, and to dress a certain way, and to speak a certain way, and do things the way that they thought that she was supposed to, and live the way they thought that she was supposed to live. So it was a shock to them. She ran off with Tea Cake and dressed a certain way, and then she came back. But when she came back, she was free. I mean, she had the courage to go and live her life and live her dreams. And then she came back. She didn't care what the town people thought, because she had found what she had looked for all her life. She was looking for love, and she found love. And once she found love, that's what gave her freedom.
She had finally found her self-fulfillment, because that's really what she had been looking for her whole life, was love. And she found that love in Tea Cake.
And it's powerful, isn't it, when you come into your own
you
don't really care what people say about you anymore. Spend so much time worrying about that.
Right.
And it's like when she came back, she was like, I could care less. Phoebe, you can go tell him if you want to, but I'm going to tell you because we kissing friends.
Right.
I like that part of the story, because we do, as humans, spend a lot of time worrying about other people's opinions of us. And so it takes a moment to find that groove for yourself as you mature.
And I find it so ironic that she found love in TK, but then she also had to kill love in order for her to survive.
Yeah.
She had to kill love. And so that brought her like in a 360 mode. She had to come right back to where she was. But when she came back, she had been fulfilled, because she had lived the spring, the summer, the fall and the winter, all those seasons. She lived in phases in her life. She lived all those seasons.
Well, ladies, this is just an awesome conversation. I'm just really tickled and so happy to have you here. I just want to close. If you all can give me your favorite quote, and just, you know, tell me why it's your favorite quote from the book.
Well, my favorite quote is when Joe Starks said, "Thank you for your compliments, but a wife don't know nothing about no speech making, and never marry her for nothing like that. She's a woman, and her place is in the home." That really tells a lot about Joe Starks as a person, because even though he was this boisterous figure in the community, he had some insecurities about himself, because he didn't want his wife to speak, or he didn't want her to be seen. So that tells a lot about him as a person, and that also explains a lot of the problems that they had in their relationships, because there were obviously some insecurities with him because he didn't let her have a voice in that relationship.
Miss Eloise?
My favorite quote is when Jane was talking to her grandmother after she had gotten married. She came back to talk to her grandmother about marriage, and she asked her, she kind of admonished her grandmother, because she told her, she said, "'Cause you told me I was going to love him, and I don't. Maybe if someone was to tell me how, I could do it." And she was looking for advice from her grandmother. She associated marriage with love, because that's what her grandmother told her. Once you get married, you will be in love.
The love will come.
And love didn't come. And so she wanted to know she could teach her how to cook, how to clean, how to wash, do chores. She wanted someone to teach her how to love. And she looked for her grandmother to get all that revelation, all that knowledge from her grandmother. So she came back to ask her, if someone would teach me how to do it, I'd do it. She was willing. She just needed to know how. And that's the wisdom that she was searching for.
Wonderful. Well, this has been a phenomenal conversation. And for those listeners out there, we didn't get a chance to talk about the meaning of the title of the book, Their Eyes Were Watching God. So I want to encourage you all to think about that and then go out and participate in some of the big read activities happening around town. For more information, visit www.asurams.com for a listing of the Albany-Daugherty County Big Read events. I'd like to thank our great guest, Ms. Miss Alicia Davenport and Miss Eloise Armstrong.
Thank you for having us.
It's been a wonderful conversation. I really do appreciate your time. And thank you to our listeners. And thank you to listening to Real Music, Real Talk, Real Radio on 92.7.